is CliffCentral.com.
Good day and welcome to another episode of Disrupt with Mpumi Nhlapo. We are live from the Cliff Central studios. Thank you to our sponsors, T-Systems, once again for making this platform possible. I've got a very exciting and energetic guest with me in studio. She's smiling very broadly. Good morning, Kelly. How are you?
Good morning, Mpumi. How are you?
Very good. Thank you. Welcome.
Thank you.
Yes. So, yeah. Kelly, before we get started, you know, the topic we'll be exploring today is really about, in this world, this disruptive world that we've been talking about, how do we grow our businesses sustainably into the future? You know, disruption comes from all angles. Financial services companies are disturbing or disrupting the banks. Vehicle manufacturers are being disrupted by the factories and companies that they outsource certain components to, where people are now coming with third-party options. So really, the discussion is, as business owners, how do we grow our businesses into the future? What are the things we need to look forward to or look What are the things that we need to look out for in terms of growing our businesses? And most importantly, what are the resources available to us to work differently? Kelly, I know you've been a very disruptive personality. You told me that I must be looking out for a roller coaster for our discussion today.
Absolutely. And for me.
Tell me about yourself. You're the CEO of Nomadic Verve. Maybe an introduction to who Kelly is?
Okay. Wow. Where do we start? Firstly, thank you so much for having me on the show. It's a complete honor to be here. Starting your own business is a very daunting thing, as you know so well. And I started this journey about 2.5 years ago. I had some really good partners who backed me, which I was really fortunate about. The three of them, Juliet, Carlos and Mike, have just given me an opportunity, which doesn't come along very often. But I suppose my disruptive personality started from a very young age. I got two brothers, and then subsequently three little sisters. But I was always a tomboy and never wanted to be conventional. I was accepted to university, and I think that's probably when the real disruption started.
Before or after university?
Before, much to my parents' horror, I declined university 3 times.
Wow. What were you accepted for at the time?
So I was going to do a BCom in marketing, and my theory was that I didn't want to just be average. So I've always just had this, my poor husband has to listen to this on a daily basis, but I've never wanted to be just mediocre. I've always wanted to try and be somebody who was different, who strove, who would strive for something that was a little bit out of reach.
Yes.
And I've come from Zimbabwe. I think, you know, we come from a nation of people who've been, under a lot of stress and strain for a number of years. But I think it's born a group, a generation of people that are strong, resilient. They make a plan. They really come to the party and they work hard. And I think that was born in me and really cultivated by my parents. So I declined university. I actually wanted to be a helicopter pilot in the British Army. That was always my...
In the British Army specifically?
Yeah, well, in any army, really. I'm not quite sure why I wanted to go in the army. but my dad... I'll never forget when he phoned me and he said, please, you know, I just had to do my fitness test, and I'd passed with flying colors, and he said to me, please just don't, let's just not go to the front line. Yeah, it was when the UK was going, you know, to war with Iraq, and it would have been on the front line. So I said, okay, that's fine, but the deal is that I'm not going to go to university. So reluctantly, he said, yes, okay, fine. So I started, I lived in the UK for about 8 years. I started a career there. I found myself in the marketing space, in the tech marketing space.
Okay.
And, I grew from there. I worked for a company called McDonnell Butler. Mike Butler is one of my business partners who backed me to start my own business. I worked for them for about 4 years.
Okay. And in the UK?
In the UK. Then decided to come home because all my family's in Zim. And I came home It was fantastic there in the tourism industry. Tourism's not for me, but but a great industry. And I decided, I was there for about a year. I met my husband, and Mike phoned me and said, would you like to start the tech agency, the marketing agency in South Africa? So I did. And I ran it for 2 years, and then the entrepreneur in me, I think, started to get a little bit restless, and I said, no, I really want to start my own thing. You know, I've got a vision around what I want to create in the marketing and sales arena in the technology industry, and I really want to follow through on that. And I McDonald Butler was a fantastic agency in the UK, but they were running their way, and I thought we needed to be more localized. And so Mike was fantastic. He supported me, and a client of mine actually said, Kelly, we'll back you. Carlos and Juliet were like, we'll back you to start. So Nomadic Verve was born about 2.5 years ago.
Oh.
Yeah. And it's been a roller coaster. It's been a roller coaster. It's been absolutely fantastic, and I'm incredibly blessed that we've had the opportunity. I've done some amazing stuff with the enterprise and in government as well.
Okay. So now before we get into that, I just want to talk a little bit about you went to the army.
Mm-hmm.
And, that's not a common thing for a young woman to want to go and be a helicopter pilot. Mm-hmm. What was happening at that stage in your life?
So I think I was just kicking against every conventional outlook. So, I'm not a traditionalist. I definitely go against the grain.
Okay.
My family's had to deal with that for 32 years, and I believe that, you know, we were all born and put on this planet for a reason, and I think that you have to relentlessly pursue your value and why you're here. And
absolutely.
I think, I think I've still got a massive journey to go on. I think there's still so much for me that I'm gonna do in my life. I have a very restless little girl in me that is constantly looking for how to make a difference to change the world, really, which sounds so corny, but it's just. It's definitely deep set. And I think the helicopter pilot thing was doing something that was completely out of what everyone expected me to do.
Okay.
I think education is just the most important thing, and university is a very important thing, but I very strongly believe that you should only go if you know what you want to do, and you have some inkling of your passion.
Okay.
You can definitely go to explore that as well, but I think the time is very much now, and I think things need to happen. I mean, my biggest, I suppose, lesson in life is if you want to do something, just go out and do it, and don't wait for everything to align. Everyone keeps saying, I've just got married, and everyone keeps saying, when are you going to have kids? And that's also a wonderful thing, but I think everyone has their time. And so the helicopter pilot thing, I will now start to train as a helicopter pilot, all those 12 years later, because it is just something that I've wanted to do.
Okay.
And then you left
the army to please your dad?
Yeah. Well, I didn't even get in because he just said to me, some experience of obviously, and he just said to me, please, you're my only daughter. It's not really.
Okay. And how did you know then that the career you took with the agency now? How did that come? How did that happen?
I was headhunted actually for that, but more not because of my knowledge of the industry, more just because of my work ethic, I think, and the way that I saw things. And I'll never forget when I met Maeve, Mike's wife, who owns McDonald Butler. She just said to me, this was serendipitous. I just feel like we should, you know, the planets have aligned. And I think because Mike and Maeve have stayed in my life for, you know, the last, we definitely were meant to have met, you know.
Yes.
I'm always exploring different things. You know, my business coach says I have a high RPM. So I like to see what other things. I mean, I think my I've always wanted to go into politics as well.
Okay. So it's a lot of energy in many places.
Loads of different places. So channeling it for me is probably the hardest thing, the most challenging. But
okay, yeah. and then you founded Nomadic Verve. We were at that stage now where. You've teamed up with some partners, and can you maybe just elaborate for me, what does Nomadic Verve do? I mean, this is the one thing you've managed to rally your energy around.
So what
does it do? What is this business all about?
So when I started it, I had a vision around, I'd worked in the technology space for at least, 6-7 years in the marketing space. And okay. I had this vision around, you know, seeing a lot more technology stuff come into the market. There's, you know, it's prolific, it's everywhere. And I was just starting to see a little bit of a disconnect between how the vendors were approaching their customers. So I had a vision around what I wanted to do and where I wanted to support either the end user, so the enterprise end user or the government end user, and therefore support the vendor in terms of how they sold and what they sold, kind of matching the demand and the supply rather than pushing the supply out to the market. So I started that. I started with an event. I took the Enterprise Mobility Forum event on.
And that's something that you created from scratch?
Yes, with Carlos, actually. So it was Carlos's idea. He started the Enterprise Mobility. And that was matching blue collar, white collar mobile solutions about 6 years ago when everything kind of came into the world of enterprise mobility. And what I wanted to do then, and after the first year that I took that, I changed it to the Enterprise of the Future because I was seeing a convergence of all the different technologies within an enterprise. So I believe in a holistic approach to technology in the enterprise.
Okay.
So for example, cybersecurity, I do a lot of cybersecurity stuff, and I don't believe that it should be siloed to any one person or department.
Okay.
I believe it's a very human there's a lot of human weakness in it, and so it needs to involve multiple disciplines and different stakeholders.
Yes.
Just as an example. So Enterprise of the Future was born.
And what does this Enterprise of the Future look like?
So for me, again, so my big thing was around driving sustainable relationships, right? So for me, the Enterprise of the Future is a business or an organization that's holistically bought into the adoption of technology.
Okay.
Everyone's involved. It's not something that's pushed out and isn't a grudge purchase. So we're involving everyone, right, from the finance, the head of finance, to operations, to HR, to marketing, to the social side of it. It's no longer, I think technology is no longer, something that kind of sits in the back.
Yes.
It's very much part of the board conversation. But it's not, it doesn't only include everybody who has a tech title.
Yes.
And I think that's where the Enterprise of the Future is really going. And I think where businesses are changing and making the most change, because it's a big change management thing, I think. And the adoption of technology is just, I don't know, it's fascinating. I really think it's a psychological thing. So so where I started Enterprise of the Future Forum was I kind of took it back to ground zero, put all the different technologies together and decided that we needed to have a better approach to how vendors were talking to the end user and not around just a sales, so not just a flea market type of environment where people were just selling. I wanted the end users to step up with their experience because they're at the coal face, right? So we need to hear, warts and all kind of what's going on because, there's so much technology coming out and big businesses have huge targets in terms of what they have to sell. And, you know, I think so I was just seeing that there was a slight disconnect in terms of really engaging the audience. So that's the premise of how Enterprise of the Future was born.
Okay.
And then I created something called 365 Engage because I started to go client side, so with the end user, to figure out what they were missing, or perhaps where they needed support. So often I find it lies on both sides. So it doesn't kind of the disconnect is not because of any one side. I do believe that there's an articulation thing also that's really important. Okay. So NGOs is being able to articulate what their issue is and what their problem is, getting the right people involved, yes, as well, and not being being put in a place where they can't actually say what it is that they want because they're worried that something's going to get sold at them.
Yes. So if I understand you correctly, what you're saying is that your business then plays a role in bringing the end users together with
the technology providers,
okay, so
right?
Fulfilling some sort of a sales orchestration function.
Correct. So we focus on sales enablement, and the platform, the 365 Engage platform that I created last year, pushes the end user through a digital transformation cycle and the vendor through a sales enablement cycle. Okay.
Can you elaborate on that?
Yeah, so basically I bring the two together through multiple touch points across an extended amount of time to create a sustainable relationship. So my thing for me is not around closing a deal. Mm. For me, it's around the human-to-human connection and how creating that connection between the vendor and the end user will inevitably drive sales for the vendor, but solve the problems for the customer. So for me, the sales beliefs that I have are around educating and empowering the end user. So I want to educate them as to what their issues are and then empower them with the knowledge of what those issues are. Then investigating those challenges within their business and helping them understand those challenges. So really understanding where the problem is, because again, the connection between vendor and buyer and seller is being slightly eroded because there's maybe not a good articulation, but not a good listening or understanding of what the problem is.
Okay.
So we do a lot of ideation pieces. And then finally, connecting them to the right vendor to solve their problems.
Their problems with them. Mm. So let's just talk about that, because being that this is quite a disruptive approach that you're taking, the conventional approach being, we discussed it earlier, you go to a convention or a conference, put salespeople at the stand, and then take business cards, if I can simplify it. What would you say is wrong or missing in the current, on the conventional mode of customer and client relations within a tech space?
Putting me into a dangerous place.
No,
please. No. Oh, no, I'm not scared to say. Not many people like to hear it. But so, for example, in the forums that we create, we don't do PowerPoint presentations. So I've taken those away entirely.
Tell me more about that.
Because I think it should be a dialogue with the person that's on the stage. We've created a different environment in terms of how everyone sits. It's created almost like a university classroom, you know, so it's almost like a lecture, right?
Yes.
So it's educational. It's not, and it should be a dialogue. So we usually ask the vendor to step onto the stage with the customer, because I want to hear like what is going on there and how the vendors react to it. Because remember, a lot of the buying thing for me is the end users, because I'm independent, I can go in and get this information from the end users. And they're saying to me, it's more about the relationship than it is about, you know, there are multiple products on the market.
Yes.
They can do a Google search and find everything that they need to find. So that was one of the things that we did, which was disruptive. And I've got a few raised eyebrows about that. And they're only 20 minutes long, because, again, a big thing for me is around I want you to listen and I want you to retain it, right? Because that drives value for the vendors that are sponsoring and participating. And then I took away the stands. Oh, gosh, that was
uproar.
Those wonderful shell schemes. I took them away and I said, no, we're not doing them anymore. So now we do more engagement stuff, right? So we do smoothie bars where we've got people cycling on motorcycles to create the smoothie. We've got more engaging areas where they can go and do graphic illustrators will work on the wall and create a story. So storytelling is a very important piece for me. I think it's fundamental to the sales cycle.
Absolutely.
And I think that if you can relate to the person that you're selling to as a human being. So we do a 3-day forum. We take everyone away. We're going to Zimbali in May this year. 5-star resort. Wonderful. We take over the whole hotel. And then we create loads of different pockets of activity, including whiskey tastings and golf days and, you know, things like that, which engage the person at a human level. So we'll do walks at 6 a.m. in the morning because, you know, we've got a few exercise bunnies that, you know, are out there and they're sharper and, you know, at 6 a.m.
Tell me then, how does that change the ability to do business? Because someone might argue to say, well, you know, we've had the golf days, yep. We've had the really cool activations. I mean, I've experienced some of those. I want to understand how that better prepares the company or the individual to lead within this very disruptive world that we live in today.
Yeah, so it's a really good question, right? So that's creating the experience, but the people that you put into that experience are probably, well, they're your main ingredient, right?
Yeah.
So what I've done this year is instead of inviting people to our forums, what I decided to do last year was actually go and see them before.
See, okay.
Right? So we don't send out like 5,000 invites. In fact, quite the contrary. Probably we've only sent out about 200 this year. And I go and sit with those end users and actually, well, firstly, I just ask them why they want to come, right? Because a lot of the time, you find these guys go to forums that are not, they're going just to get out the office. I mean, Zimbabwe is a great place to go, right? You'd want to go, you'd want to just go, right? But for me, I go and quiz them, and because we're independent, I've got nothing to sell them, right? So inevitably they tell me, well, I can push them a lot harder. But inevitably they'll tell me really what they want to get to. And I'll say to them, I don't want to waste your time and I don't want to waste my time or, you know, the other participants. I want you there in your own right as a person who's experienced in this area of disruption or transformation. So, and again, so the bigger thing also is I don't believe in quantity. So it's only about 150 people, but we get a smaller number of end user organizations with more people attending.
I see, from those organizations.
Multiple areas. So I think that, I mean, I got a lot of pushback because, you know, I was told it would be very resource heavy, and it has been resource heavy in Pumi. There's no doubt about it. But, for me, I'm creating something, I'm getting exactly the right people into an experience that will address their own human needs and their own human likes and kind of need for like adventure or curiosity, right?
Yes.
And I'm getting the right people into that situation. And then I've got a couple of, so I'm a big believer in like the up and coming people, you know, the guys that are disrupting in the middle or at the bottom. And the only way that I can find that is by going in and actually meeting people and then getting connected. And so it's that massive hub and spoke scenario. But I think it's also around focusing on the sales side of things and being quite open about that, you know. The reason why you come into the forum is because there are obviously a number of vendors who have engaged in this type of forum, believe that it's useful, and they've got something to do, to sell you or tell you or educate you on. But even within the organization, the vendor organizations themselves, I'm getting a lot of people coming that are a lot higher up in the vendor organization. So I don't just send the sales guys, right?
And now tell me, the companies from a nomadic work perspective that you've worked with that are the most successful, you know, based on your experience, what are they doing that other businesses are maybe missing a trick on? How are they operating differently?
So from a vendor side or an end user side?
Either. So, so it's, I mean, really, because certainly in doing things the way you're doing, it's to deliver results, right?
Absolutely,
and the results are meant to be relevant to the times within which we operate. So I'm interested to understand the companies that are getting it right. What are the things, what are the top three things maybe that they're tapping into that are helping them to be successful?
Yeah, okay. So if you look at it from a vendor perspective, I definitely think Microsoft is getting it right from a in relation to what we are doing with them. Okay. I think that they are some of the individuals within there are hugely visionary. Okay. I think it definitely comes from the top. But they have this need to try and do different things and break the legacy around what marketing should be or what sales should be. The other thing I think that's really important from a vendor perspective is the inclusiveness of external resource. So I'm a big believer in using people who are experts in what they do, right?
Okay.
And that whole collaboration exercise, getting a number of different experts together to create something magic.
From outside the organization.
Yeah.
Okay.
If you can't find it within, and I think the thing that I like about Microsoft is they're constantly looking for that new
edge,
right? Which,
yes.
They do a lot with like their partner network and stuff. And in fact, that's how I met, Intivate. And yeah, they, from that angle, really, really interesting. From the end user side, I think it's the inclusiveness.
Okay.
So if I look at like an APSA, we've got like their whole digital team coming in May, and they're just so bought in and hungry to really address this digital transformation process.
Okay.
And I think that shows a lot in the type of stuff that they're willing to explore. So the curiosity, I think, is hugely important for me.
Okay.
I think that's key. I look at Old Mutual as well. I just see what they're doing with their digital garage in Cape Town, and I just think it's epic. The team there are, yeah, they're inspiring, and I think that they're trying to break boundaries. I think a lot of the stuff doesn't get out, you know, enough, because how do you shout about it, really, right?
But that's something which is, you know, always, you know, one of the thing. My role is, you know, I look after marketing, you know, and a big part of it is to do, you know, lead generation, pipeline build, all these, you know, sales terminologies out there. And the question I always ask is, how do we translate this into actual revenue, you know, in our books?
Yeah.
And so the question I guess I want to pose to you is, how are you enabling or ensuring that, and both on the customer side, that they realize the benefits, but also in terms of the vendors or suppliers that you work with, that they actually deliver revenue back to their businesses? How do you ensure that? Because obviously the platforms are great.
Yeah, no,
but
absolutely.
Then after we leave Zimbali, we need to.
No, exactly.
Yeah.
So it's actually a great question you asked. The reason why 365 Engage was born was because I was seeing, so we were doing these forums. I knew who was coming from both sides, and I knew that there was opportunity on both sides, right?
Yes.
So if we talk about from a vendor perspective, so I put myself into the vendor's shoes, and I'd get guys come back and say, so 3 months afterwards, they'd say, oh, that was such an amazing event. And then 6 months later, yeah, no, it was kind of a good event. 9 months, what? What was that event?
Yeah.
And I mean, this is me being, you know, brutally honest about, you know, I could have put my head in the sand. I could have said, how will I know that it's a good event?
Yes.
And there was a time when I kind of thought, oh, you know, I don't know what else to do here. Like, you know, what am I? I know that there are opportunities there. And the funny thing was, is I was hearing about those opportunities. I mean, millions of dollars worth of revenue was being driven out of our event. I know it's been driven. But then you get pockets of people saying, and to be honest, and for me, there's nothing worse for me than a lazy salesman. Drives me nuts.
There's no such a thing as a lazy salesman, isn't it?
Sure. That responsibility thing, yeah, that just be, no, that event didn't generate any ROI. So I thought to myself, you know, No. I'm going to check this out. There's something here that's not going on. And so 365 Engage was born. And in fact, it came from a moment. The conviction was when I sat in a meeting with a guy called Anthony Doherty, who I have a lot of respect for. And I said to him, I know that, you know, there's been something about not generating ROI.
Uh-huh.
And he was like, what? No, that's absolute bull beep. And I was like, no, I know, you know, I'm willing, we've got to try and, you know, and he was like, no, absolutely not. What you do generates an incredible amount of ROI, and the people that don't see it are the people that don't get the disruptive way that you address the sales and marketing thing. So you almost, what I've been trying to do is actually put the leads on a platter and say, here you go. But what I was finding is you'd get some people who would take those, run with them, and really make something epic.
Okay.
I mean, Microsoft has supported it for 5 years, right? So. Right. And there's multiple other vendors. I just use them as an example, but they've supported it for a long time, and obviously for a reason, right? Mm. it's a big investment.
What are they doing differently that others can learn from?
Well, so they basically
and learn from even in other platforms. So it could be other forums out there that they're joining.
Yeah. So I think so that's when 365 engaged, and this is where I thought I need to get involved, actively involved in the understanding of what the demand is. So where the stuff is lying, so where the opportunity is, and then help drive, push that through the cycle.
Okay.
Right. So I think the difference between Nomadic Verve and then your normal kind of agency is I step into the sales role with the vendor and take responsibility with the vendor, because obviously I want it to be a sustainable relationship for us.
That's
right?
Fantastic.
Because I just think that's I just don't see people doing that, right? Because they kind of run away from it. And yes, I'm not saying that it's all going to be bluebirds and we're going to make, you know, of course there's going to be good and bad times. And there are some clients that I can't work with because they don't see that, because they just believe that, you know, you pay this amount of money and you get those leads.
Yeah.
You don't understand your market if that's what you think. So I believe in really like hand in hand going with the vendor. And the only way that I can do that, right, was to go to the end user.
Okay.
And to say, right, so I believe that you met with this vendor. How did it go? And you should have seen the stuff that I heard in Pumi.
Wow.
It was human stuff mostly, right? Oh, I didn't like that guy, so I'm not going to do business. What? But you can't not do business with a company because you're like that individual.
Yeah.
But they're never going to come to the company and say, oh, by the way, I don't like Joe Bloggs, so I'm not going to do business with you, right? So I saw it as an important way to start a conversation and play a role, a pivotal role between the two, to try and drive value by disrupting the way that it's usually done, right?
Absolutely.
I don't want that, yeah, no, these are the 20 CIOs that we want to be. No. What do you want to sell? Okay, tell me that. Okay, what industries do you want to go into? And let's look at that. Let's like, it won't, might not be those people. Let's explore it. Let's see where we can actually drive some huge impact without going for that, you know, being very regimented and blinkered.
I like that a lot. I mean, if I look at the platforms that we've participated in and how much I try to push the platform owners to say, we need you, because I know the customers want to engage. Yeah, playing that role.
Yeah.
So that's absolutely fantastic. And it's working. It's delivering results.
It is. It's, I have to say, it's been huge. It's very frustrating. Because not everyone, buys into it. But I've had some really good businesses, some really good vendors buy into it and see the value for it.
Okay.
Because I'm kind of saying, I'm going to put my neck on the line with you.
And that's the important
part. Right? Yes. I'm taking responsibility of this with you. I'm not saying it's always going to be, you know, epic and we're going to like, but I am saying that if we're consistent about it and continuous about it, and we drive a 365-day engagement with the end user across multiple touch points, we're going to create a platform that they're going to want to come back to, because at some point in the line, we're going to hit a trigger point with them and
yes.
It's going to work.
Yes.
And so it's been hugely refreshing to work with vendors that have seen it.
Mm.
It's been a massive journey. I do a lot of work with a company called Performanta, and they, you know, up and coming, they're growing exponentially in cybersecurity. And yeah, it's working with the sales guys. I think it's making them understand that they're also part of the whole. You know, I mean, you must see it in point.
Yeah,
it's like,
absolutely.
You know, getting them involved in it and saying, hey, you know, this is takes two to tango here. It's not
absolutely.
Just marketing feeding you leads,
yeah.
You know.
So let's talk about disruption in your space. If you look at what Google is doing around, you know, moving beyond search engine optimization to now digital lead generation campaigns. If we look at the different types of robots that sell to me on a daily basis, I mean, I love hats. I get sold hats, sneakers, all the good stuff.
Yeah.
And it's largely done by robots, right?
Yeah.
So you alluded earlier to the fact that people can go search for the information themselves and they can become very self-sufficient. Plus, we've got robots on this side.
Yeah.
Where's the space for humans in your industry going forward?
So, it's such an interesting thing for me. I think the human-to-human connection, the irony of the whole technology revolution or, you know, fourth industrial revolution, however you want to call it, but is that I think that the people that cultivate the human relationship or the human to human touch point are the people that will create a niche in any industry that they're in. You know, there's the argument around AI and what it's going to do and where it's going to go. I think it's a lot more developed. I've read loads of stuff around how developed it is, and we don't even know how developed it is yet,
wow.
Right? If you see what Elon Musk is doing, and it's just, I think the human side of things, and you go back to basics, right? Everyone has a mom and a dad. They got married, they got siblings, they've got kids. If you look at them, and I always think about celebrities in this way, if you peel back everything, they're just humans at the end of the day.
Mm.
They go to sleep, they eat, they have to go to work, whichever work it is, right? And the more you can keep that in focus, the more I think that you will probably be able to create a sustainable connection from human to human.
Okay.
Because it doesn't, I think especially in Africa, although the technology revolution here is going at a rate of knots, there's still, from a cultural perspective, that human thing is so important.
Absolutely.
Across multiple cultures, I think. And acknowledging, I think that for me is such an important thing. I love the cultural thing for me is huge, you know, and exploring all the different, I come from Zimbabwe, but exploring all the different cultures in South Africa have been, I don't know, just, you know, learning how to say please and thank you and respect and doing it in a way that relates to them.
But technology almost takes away the need for that.
But,
you know, the reason we want to shop online is I don't want to say please and thank you. I want to pick what I want and then check out online, and then an anonymous person must deliver it and hopefully I don't get to see them.
Yeah.
That's where we are, right? And so that's why I want to understand, when you talk about these niches that are human-centric, give me a vision or a picture of what those niches might translate into.
Well, if you link it to politics as an example, right?
Okay.
I just think you can't get away from the human thing. Yes, we all buy online. I mean, I buy online. I hate shopping. Definitely not a girly girl. But I still think to change the world.
Okay.
And to change things like the education crisis and poverty and things like that.
Yeah.
There's no robots that are going to do that stuff. So I'm
okay.
thinking, I'm not thinking now from a nomadic verve perspective. I'm
okay.
thinking much bigger than that. I think that businesses need to constantly think about how they're making a difference. You know, how they're impacting on everyday lives. And the only way that that's going to be seen is if there's a human connection there. It doesn't matter how many, you know, things you can buy online or the access to whatever it is. When people go through like a crisis, for example, or where there's if you look at all the, I mean, I don't know how many political crises there are in the world today, but if you look at things like that, the driving force is human.
Okay.
Right?
Okay.
The driving force is somebody who can feel for the people that have lost their homes.
Okay.
For the people who don't have connection to technology and therefore can't get medical care. It's not a robot going, oh, I can see that there's a pocket of people here who don't have a connection. Yes, you could probably find them, but you wouldn't understand what they needed through robotics.
Absolutely.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, and I mean, there is a very big drive of late, and where companies are looking at how they can still, how can they can do good business, you know?
Yeah.
So to be profitable and to be successful in their own right, but then to also be able to have a net positive impact on the environment within which they operate.
Yeah, it's a social responsibility, right? I mean, I'm not saying that everyone should sit around the fire and sing kumbaya, but I am saying that I think the only way that business will survive going forward, and we're talking about the tech world, which, yes, okay, it's growing exponentially, but there are other industries where tech will influence, but they will still be heavily people oriented. If you look at agriculture, so I'm a farming girl, and I mean, that's all people orientated, right?
Yes.
You know, I'll give you an example. I had a friend of mine tell me a story about, he made a payment to all his farm workers via mobile, and one of the more elderly farm workers came to him in tears and said, and she'd broken her phone, right?
Sure.
And she said, I can't get my money. Everyone says that this is where my money is. And he said, yes, I sent it to you using EcoCash. And she said, but I can't find it. She'd broken the phone to find the money.
Wow.
Okay. And that was only a couple of weeks ago. And that broke my heart, because everyone thinks, yeah, technology is great and it'll give access. But there's a massive number of people out there that are not connected yet, that don't understand it.
Yes.
And it took a human to say, don't worry, mama, here is the money. Let me show you where it is and how you can get it, right?
And now, how can your industry help to continue to maintain the relevance for the human, you know, for the human touch? Because ultimately, I mean, it's about corporates, right? It's about business. Because yes, the entrepreneurs are coming through and there'll be breakthroughs. But for most of us, it's about these corporates that drive these waves of change. How can platforms like the one that you facilitate and others that you participate in continue to maintain?
Well, I think it's to raise awareness of it.
Okay.
So for me, the education thing is just massive. I think that it's fundamentally the most important thing from an African perspective in terms of getting everyone educated to a point where they can be empowered and become self-sufficient.
Okay.
So, for example, I think, you know, like our platform, I always include, so very, very close to my heart is a school called Crystal House in Cape Town, which all the kids that go there are sponsored, and they're doing some amazing stuff with educating very impoverished children.
Okay.
And I think that every corporate has a responsibility to get involved, but not from just throwing money at it, right? You need to go there.
Yes.
You need to see those kids. So we're going back to the human connection, right? We're going back to being involved in creating a better world for everyone, allowing people to empower and letting people become empowered. So I think that big corporates have, and I try and bring that into, so we always do like a CSI thing at our at our events, or in all the stuff that we do, we try and involve an element of that. But I think if I see my bigger clients, I always try and see if there's something that we can do with them to try and drive that. Again, it's not going to happen overnight. I think there's still a huge human element.
We
to
need time.
You know, it's time. But I think if you start as you mean to go on, which is probably my favorite saying, then you will eventually make a difference. And I think it's actually actively getting involved and not throwing money at the problem.
Yes,
right?
Yes, yes.
And making a difference, a sustainable difference, not a short-term difference.
Just to have And for salespeople, now, you know, I'm trying to be more effective in this current world. How do I evolve myself, or as a sales manager for my team?
So, for me, it's about continuity and consistency.
Okay, talk me through that.
So, the constantly touching your clients on a continuous cycle of different. So it's not only about selling the product. It's sustainable relationships at the end of the day, right? So that's what I preach. And for me, it's about if you've identified a target audience, you go in and for me, the sales cycle is quite long because I don't want to go in and just throw something at the client, right? If I believe in it, I'm definitely going to say this is where I think and this is why I believe in it. But I think that it's the listening.
Okay.
We are driven by targets. We are driven by quarterly revenue numbers. And I think you, as soon as you start to let that overtake your life or your world, your sales world, you lose touch with the people that you are trying to sell to. So this whole platform that I created was all around multiple engagements, multiple touch points continuously.
Okay.
Right? Linking it all in. There should always be a thread of relevance to everything that you do. You know, why are you doing this? Because I'm trying to do that. Why are you? I mean, a sustainable relationship comes about by cultivating from multiple different things, right? It's not just one touch point with the end user. They're not going to phone you after you've done one forum with them, right?
Absolutely.
But you're going to go out for a beer with them, or you're going to say happy birthday to them, or you're going to ask them how their child is.
But those things sound so obvious. They sound like,
I know.
It's almost like 101.
Yeah, I know. I mean, it is 101.
So is it that it's not happening, or?
Well, I don't think
so. Or technology has pushed us further back from our customers?
Yeah, so I think there's two things that are happening. So there's this drive to grow the bottom line. And the targets, I mean, I hear it so often where a company's done really well and then their targets are like pushed through the roof the following year.
Yes.
Right? But that just cannibalizes your whole sales ecosystem because now you're just going to bang harder on those doors, right? But I think what's important is the listening thing, it is sales 101. I mean, it's just not, like, I can't, it's not rocket science.
Absolutely.
It's not rocket science. But I think that I think where I wanted Nomadic Verve to go was as an external party, I can kind of hold my vendors responsible, right?
Okay.
Okay. I can say to them, right, you spent this money with me. Okay. Let's like make use of it. I need you to participate here. I'm not actually reinventing the wheel, but I am being disruptive by saying this is 101, you're not doing it.
Okay.
Right?
Okay.
Step up, participate here. Because I've sat in front of a number of end users and said, geez, we had this amazing deal and this is what we were gonna do, and the vendor's never gone back. What?
Doesn't make sense.
What? Like, the end user's telling me that they had something on the table. But again, because maybe it wasn't big enough, because they didn't see the vision, because it wasn't addressing their pipeline, other stuff was more important. I think the best salespeople out there are people that constantly are touching their ecosystem, whether it's small, big, medium, because one thing leads to another, right? If you look at the reason why I'm here today, it's because I've got a really good relationship with Mark.
Yeah.
There's no other reason. You wouldn't have known about me, right? Yeah. But, he got what I do, and he was like, yeah, you. And so it's just about the network. And I think, you know, it's such a small world. So you have to, just be cognizant of that. Yeah. And
okay, so before we wrap up, three questions for you.
Okay.
Simple questions.
Oh, okay.
The first one is disruption.
Yeah.
Your definition of what it means to be disruptive?
That's a good question. I actually think being disruptive is about being yourself.
Okay.
Right?
Being
I think
yourself.
It's the courage to be who you are. I think it's understanding who you are and then grabbing that with both hands and saying, this is who I am and this is what I want to be, and being disruptive and seeing and standing up when everyone else sits down.
And that's right? How you've lived your life.
Yeah, well, I hope, you know, it's standing by your dreams and stuff like that. Obviously, that's, you know, again, 101. But for me, it's about learning who you are and being who you are. Because I think very much, you know, my husband is a professional golfer, and he's taught me so much about life in general, because golf is all about getting back up, right? Yeah, getting back up is just, and he does that like an absolute pro. I mean, he's hugely inspirational, but he is who he wants to be at the cost of not having the life that he probably could have in terms of, you know, going into a normal 9-to-5, right? Mm-hmm. He's risked so much. He's risked belief of his family. He's done all that stuff, which I think very few people do. And he stood up and he's been brave enough to say, this is who I am. You either accept it or you don't.
That's amazing. So being disruptive is about being yourself, your true self.
Yeah.
My second question, your vision for the country in a disruptive world. So we'll leave the politics for now.
No.
But framed within a disruptive world. Yeah. What is your vision, or even for the continent?
Yeah, so I'm an African baby. I love it. I just love this continent. I have a deep fire in me for, I don't think I'll ever leave it. Mm. Or at least if I do temporarily, and I think that's what brought me back here. I just want to see education really take hold. I mean, I come from a country where we've been blessed with an incredible education. Mm. And you see it. You know, you see the difference it makes. If I look at Kenya, you know, I've done a lot of travel to Kenya, and I see that their education system is just, those guys, they've all got opinions and they all stand up and they say something. For me, I think the biggest disruptive positive that will come out of Africa is when all the countries and all the citizens of Africa stand up to the dictators and the people that have oppressed them for so long, with the access to education, medication, things like that, that technology can enable.
Can enable, yes.
So for me, it's seeing a new Africa enabled by technology, and the younger generation being given the opportunity to be bigger and better and to stand up and be who they are.
Fantastic.
And, yeah, to love who they are.
And the last one, your business, where are you going now? The future for Nomadic Verve?
To disrupt. I'm probably, I don't know, you know, being an entrepreneur, the biggest thing is about agility. So I have a vision, and I really want to, you know, I want to be known as somebody who connects people. I want to be known as somebody who can fix things, who knows a person, who can make a plan.
Yes.
Because of this human thing, I think more and more it's becoming about who you know. Okay. And obviously there's that old saying, who you know, not what you know. But I think more and more that's coming into focus, because life is just going by so fast. And I think the people who can make that connection are the ones that will thrive. Emotionally, it will be take a huge toll on people's lives. I think the the rat race and just how fast things are moving. But I think Nomadic Verve has a big future ahead of it. I say that because I believe that if we can help connect people in a meaningful way to solve problems, to drive business, and to do it by taking on some of the responsibility for both parties, then I think that's quite unique. And I think it's quite a bold statement, because you're standing up to say, okay, I'm going to take some of your your responsibility, and I'm going to walk with you, and I'm going to do it with you because I believe that I can help you. And of course, you know, we need to make money at the end of the day as a business. But I think if I'm doing it for a bigger purpose and I'm trying to actually help people sleep better at night, then it's all the better.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
Thank you so much, Kelly. It's been wonderful.
Pleasure.
I didn't even see the time pass by. It's really been great.
Yeah, thank you. Thank
you very much for tuning in and listening to Disrupt with Mpumintlapo. You know, the biggest message for me today is that, you know, a huge driver for disruption for all of us is to be ourselves and to pursue that innermost passion, desire, or dream that we wanted to make a reality. And that it's actually within us. Obviously, technology enables it. The change in industry enables all the things we do. But really, tapping into our inner selves is probably the best and most unique weapon that we have to tackle this very disruptive world. Thank you very much to T-Systems, our sponsors, for making this possible. To Kels and the team on the show. We'll catch you again next week on Disrupt with Mpumintlapo. Have a wonderful day.
This is CliffCentral.com.